my first search is not recipes for. It's always like history of. What's the culture? What grows in that area?
Ratios are just another way that you can start from scratch if you have nothing.
Is there salt? Because there should always be salt. Welcome back to Kitchen Tape. I'm Rose Wild.
And I'm Cassie Mendieta.
And today we're going to talk about one of our favorite subjects, what we basically spend a lot of our time doing, which is...
recipe development. Yeah. I would say that, I mean, that's quite literally my full-time job, so...
Yeah. But even when you were baking primarily...
Yeah, that's still such a big part of your job when you're...
And like, also, I would say it bleeds into... just your life, right? Like you're never gonna make like a meal just immediately how you find it, or not think about making it again a different way after you've made it once. Or at least that's how I find my life is generally dictated.
Yeah, I feel like I'm eating the same thing often, but it is never the same the way I prepare it. Like even if it's something super simple, I'm gonna elevate it every single time I have it. Yeah,
I sort of push back. I mean, like, I feel like what I like to do also in my head is elevate it, but I'm starting to feel like the need to push back on that word because I think it might be a little elitist. It's less about raising it to a new level and more about making it tastier to you.
Yeah, like sidestepping.
Well, I feel like to me, for the average home cook, when I tell them like that verbiage, there's this sense that there's like some sort of Michelin secret I know or something, you know, and like they could never elevate a cuisine. Like I recently asked a friend for a picture of the dinner they were making, which sounded delicious, lasagna. But she was like, I can't send you any photos. It's not restaurant quality. It's not elevated. And I was like, I feel like we're stealing some joy by using these words that make it sound like I've made it better.
Yeah.
Rather than just like different. And I think what really is cool about recipe development that makes it endlessly interesting is that we're going to come up with our own version of the best X. And it's more about the method of getting there than necessarily being like, well, how do I chase that definitive? Okay, so I think that we should kind of talk about how, like, the bones and structure of how we think about recipe development as a process that people could follow, and then kind of go into a specific example and talk through all those things. So for me, if I'm going to make something, I always want to do like first pass research of what it is and where it's from. Like I never go, like my first search is not recipes for. It's always like history of. What's the culture? What grows in that area? And I kind of make this little like diagram and kind of lay it on top of what I know I have in California so that I can make something that tastes of here and there. So that's always my first step approach. And then I start looking at like who else has made it, who else thinks like they make a good churro. What's your step one?
It kind of comes in waves because like there's sometimes where I have a flavor that I want to work with and I just like kind of think about all the ways I could use it until I land on the specific way that I want to incorporate it into something.
So you start from flavor rather than from like an item.
Oh, well, it like kind of depends. So when I'm developing something like my base, like croissant, which is something I'm working on, I will read every single book I have on croissants, on bread, and find that base where it's like, where is everything having like an overlap? They all have bread flour, they all have milk, they all have yeast, and seeing like what ratios things work in. And like,
so then would you agree that you're looking at history and sort of definitions first?
Yeah.
And then comparing recipes?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important to get a foundation so you know what you're making. Okay, so then we compare recipes. How many recipes do you generally compare before you like?
I mean, it kind of depends what I'm making and like how much is out there and what I kind of in my research see as like, this is someone who like actually knows, like is an expert in this. So like if I was doing croissants, I wouldn't just Google like croissant recipes and then follow like Sally's hometown cooking croissant recipe. Like, I'm sure it's great and I'm sure she enjoys it, but like, I'm going to look at something that's like the CIA cookbook or like Tartine, Dominic Ansel, like, look at people who I kind of admire in each, like, category and see how they're doing it. And so that could be 5 books. That could be 20. Right now for croissants, I have, like, a stack of 15 books.
I think my magic number is sort of 10 to 12. And I'll, like, print them out or have the book out. And I'll literally take up the floor and put them, like, all
side by side.
Side by side. And just kind of walk down. Because it does get overwhelming
if you do have... And it also starts to... They all start to kind of look the same because...
Because they are. Because it's ratios. They are.
It's ratios. And
it's ratios as opposed to a recipe.
Yeah.
So that's what I kind of go through next is, like, looking for all the common things, taking note of what something is actually doing in a recipe. Like, why are we using butter as opposed to oil? What kind of leavener do we have going on here? What kind of flour is being used? For me, I'm always going to change that up. Is there salt? Because there should always be salt. And then from there, that's kind of where I pick my first base for whatever it is I'm making. Like, you know, I'm kind of talking from a place of making something completely not having a base before.
Yeah.
But do you also look then for the commonalities?
Yeah. I'm always looking like, okay, everyone here is using butter for chocolate chip cookies. There's probably a reason for this. Or like, and thinking, did they even try olive oil? Or like, you know, things like that. Like, if if every single recipe has something that is consistent across the board, it kind of just, like, automatically makes sense that that has to be there.
Yeah.
And, like,
you I would know? Agree. So this is how you learn the rules. It's worth noting the rule because that's your reliable rule. But then you also know exactly how you can break that rule and see the change in packs. And I think that, you know, as you begin to bake or cook and you're doing things, it's less some magical spell you brew together and hope it works as realizing and learning what each thing you're doing is making happen.
Yeah.
So that you can choose something else. Choose another adventure and then have, you know, have a different experience and start to make it more and more yours.
Yeah.
Okay, so we make the thing.
Yeah.
And are you changing things as you go?
I have a sheet that I use for, like, all of my personal recipes. It will populate the percentage of each ingredient in the recipe for me. And so I will, like, plug in some of these recipes and see what those percentages are and then find that median point and then be like, okay, well, these all have flour and it's, like, about 36% of the entire recipe of all of them is the average. So that's kind of where I'll start, like, at 36% flour and then, like, X whatever is butter and X whatever is milk. And then I'm like, okay, this seems like a good starting point. And, like, seeing which things are changing flavor and which things are, like, changing the structure. Because if I use a flour that's, like, less glutinous, it's going to change. But, like, that first recipe is, like, well, this has a texture I like. So how can I make changes that are going to amplify flavor but give me the same texture? So that's not always going to be, like, okay, take out 50 grams of AP and put in 50 grams of rye. It might be like putting in like 70 grams of rye to get the same
and doing texture. A couple iterations of those.
Until I'm like, okay, it has that texture that I liked in the beginning, but now it also has a flavor that I enjoy.
And conversely, if you nail the flavor though and we want to play with texture, it becomes playing with other elements too. Like, do we add another egg yolk? Do we switch the leavener?
Yeah.
Do we let it rest longer? Do we try a different flavor pairing? So you go through a couple iterations where you're always kind of critiquing and then ultimately landing on, I think, still a living document. Like, you're never really done.
No recipe is ever done for me. Like, I even like my vanilla buttermilk cake, that's like my go-to star. After like 3 months, I'm like, oh, we can do better than this.
And then we just shave off 1 gram of flour.
Yeah. And I'm like, 2 extra grams of salt. Yeah.
I find myself most often redoing old recipes and switching out the acids. I'll be like, oh, well, this was really good with lemon juice. What if I did it with yuzu juice? Or what if I did it with this elderflower vinegar or this persimmon vinegar? Yeah. I really love vinegars. Big fan of Acid League and Tart vinegar in New York. So I think that's basically the approach and the method.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of how I landed early on in my career as to how to approach it. And I've only refined it through repetition, like doing more research, having reliable sites I go to look to first, knowing the experts already in the field, having an eye for those ratios, and then test.
Because I think when I was thinking ratios, I learned like the very basic ones, like this is the ratio for like a quick bread and this is for a cookie. But then it got to a point where I was like, okay, but what's the ratio for something like a flan? Like I never saw that in like one of the books I was working on.
Sure.
That's when I like had this, my little Google thing, and I was like, that's when I'm going to start putting other things in there and like working to find the ratios of other things I enjoy and want to make.
Which is an extra step. But when you put into ratios, it becomes very small numbers that are just honestly a lot more easy for us to see relationships between. Yeah. So worth the trouble. There's a couple things worth the trouble when testing and recipes. Finding ratios, one. Mm-hmm. Getting a scale, two.
Ratios are just another way that you can start from scratch if you have nothing.
Yeah.
Because you just plug and play in this ratio and then tweak from there.
Another third thing worth the trouble, a kitchen notebook for all these iterations.
Yes.
This is something that if you're in a professional kitchen, you're going to love it. It's going to be your most precious possession. It's going to be the size of your back pocket. It's going to be as waterproof as you can make it. And you'll be making notes in it. Constantly.
It's still even so helpful. Even if you're taking
little notes on what you did,
It
is absolutely helpful if you're actually trying to develop a recipe for anything.
Or even if, like, okay, I've made this chocolate chip cookie recipe. It's like my grandma's recipe and I love it. But today I had this like extra egg yolk from like another recipe. What if I just like threw this in here? And then you can make a little note that like, oh, when I added an extra egg yolk, it was even like more like almost custardy in the center of this
honestly
cookie.
An extra and egg yolk in anything makes it more custardy. It's always like a good idea. Rich.
But like you can make a note of that, like grandma's cookie recipe times 16 plus egg yolk, bomb. And then you know for next time, like,
in fact, just go ahead and get your no self a notebook right down
right now.
Oh, and Moleskine. Write that down. Yes. Hashtag Moleskine. Moleskine is our preferred brand. Hashtag not sponsored. Hashtag please sponsor. okay, so I think, you know, there's people who learn by ideas and people who learn by example. So kind of talk you through a specific example. Today we decided on
churros.
Because they're incredible. They're delicious.
I've been craving them.
Yeah, so that's what we made today. And we're going to kind of talk you through, like, how we got to what's on the table.
So churros are a fried shoe dough, which is the same dough that comprises, like, eclairs, crullers, cream puffs, croquembouche, gougères. How could I forget about gougères?
I mean, you got to throw in that savory,
but it's
friend.
Like that whole blanket of those pastries. This one just happens to be fried. And then it gets rolled in cinnamon sugar.
And its shape is really fun, right? Because you always need to pipe it with a star tip.
With a star tip. So that way it gets those like craggly edges and those like bumps and valleys. And then it holds on to like even more of the cinnamon sugar.
It also helps like it like evenly disperse while it's frying.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you sort of get some blowouts. Having these ridges is really kind of what makes churros possible. And they're in like all shapes and sizes, right? And today you've got sticks.
Yeah, I've got like classic churro shape, but I think it's a place called The Loop. They do like this fun, it starts and then it balloons out and then
comes
back together, and they like dip it in chocolate and put like fruity pebbles and Oreos on it.
I've seen those also. My understanding is those are sort of the like just south of the border style churros. Yeah. They're a lot thinner.
They're a lot thinner and like crispier.
These
are a little doughier, but still crisp, fresh out the fryer.
But this is also like we want it thicker because we are going to fill it and or even if we're just dipping it, we want it to really carry a lot of sauce. So which is to say that all beautiful churro bodies.
All shapes and
space
sizes.
Space for beautiful. All churro bodies. Okay. Churro positivity. Well, they look delicious to me. Is cinnamon the only sugar you usually pair them with?
My favorite spice to add to the sugar is like Chinese five spice.
Oh, yes.
Because then you get like more depth of flavor. I love it with like a black pepper sugar as well. Mm-hmm. Like any spice in sugar on a churro, delicious.
Just for those of us who don't know, can you give us the five spices for Chinese five spice?
So the five spices are star anise, fennel seeds, peppercorns, cloves, and cinnamon.
Awesome. Yeah, all those nice warming ones. Mm-hmm. They just really like sell that.
It's like
nice
very
kind
harmonious.
Of toasty.
Like toasty harmoniousness. So Rose, I'm fairly new to LA, as in I've been here for 3 years, but I don't get out much. So where would you suggest I get the best churro in LA?
I actually feel like that might describe a lot of people in LA, especially in the last 3 years, since nobody got out very much with the pandemic.
Moving to a new city during a pandemic is not the move.
Yeah. It should have planned for that one better.
Yeah. But also 3 years without an LA churro is, that's all on me. I could have had a churro by now.
Yeah.
So where do you suggest I get the
I best? I think the best, like the most authentic in terms of experience is going to be on Olivera Street.
Okay.
I don't even remember the name of the churro place, but it's like the churro place there. Mm-hmm. And they do the jam stuffed ones. And they make them really, really long, like extra long, like almost 24 inches. And they're really thin. And they just like, they fill them on site. So they don't get soggy, which I think is like
right now?
Really.
I want to scream cut so we can just hop in the car and go get them.
Behind the scenes will be us eating and moaning over these churros. But yeah, and I think Olivera Street just in general is like such a cool vibe. Mm-hmm. More people should support sort of that historic landmark. Yeah.
The only churro I've had in LA is from El Pollo Loco. And they're pretty okay. They're pretty okay. I won't say it's the best churro in LA, but they're pretty okay.
Let me ask you, controversial. Do you think that Taco Bell's cinnamon twists count as a churro?
No.
I think a lot of people would say yes because
like
it's basically
fried noodles, actually.
It is, but it's the same idea, right? It's like a spiral dough
that is
deep fried and then tossed in cinnamon sugar.
But the texture is so different. It's more of like a...
Well, America always ruins ethnic food. I don't feel like that's... I'm just saying, like, if churros never cross the borders, I feel like people would think of those cinnamon twists
as the
churros.
Closest thing to a churro we have.
I'm on the fence, but I do actually think that those deserve a shout out on their own because I really loved those as a child.
Churros.
Where's the best churro you've ever had? In the world.
I feel like I'm going to get so much shit for this. I am going to say Disneyland. I do truly love a Disneyland churro. It's so nostalgic.
Okay. That's the best one you've ever had. I'm trying to quickly, I'm forgetting the name of it, but it is like one of the most famous places to get a churro. Oh, I thought so. It's El Moro in Mexico City. It is got quite the reputation because it looks pretty sleek. Like it's very Gen Z. And there's a couple different locations.
What does a Gen Z churro look like?
I'm thinking more like the presentation is very Gen Z. Like if you walk into El Moro, they have a couple of them. It's very clean, like white and blue and like just like very minimalist graphic. But it was all like tons of young kids and everyone who looked very hip and in the know. Yeah. And they were only, I think one of the things I think of when I think of a more Gen Z approach to things is like limited menu, really honed in on just what you want to offer. So much of what you see in older generations, I think when you set up any restaurant is like trying to offer everything.
Yeah.
Because like the beginning of American restaurants were like offering all the standards and like only through time have point of views come up. And so I think when you talk about something like a churrería that has like only making one thing, you could still offer every filling in the moon, every shape, and they've really zoned in on like doing the long sticks, which are phenomenal, and they fry to order, or they'll do a really fat snake spiral and then cut it in half and stuff it with ice cream.
Oh, hell yeah.
So it's like those are the two things to do, and that's all they need to do, and it's incredible. And I think another mark of like a hip new thing is when there's haters, and everyone's like, oh, El Moro. No, there's better ones, but I ate all the churros, and those were the best ones. So there's a lot of fun things there. So, okay, churro dough, Very right. foundational, as you said. Yeah. What makes this one yours? Okay. Like, how did you develop
this one? For this specifically, because I have a few ways that I go about developing a recipe. For this, I literally read and watched about 1,000 videos and recipes on churros and kind of looked for what everyone had, and they all have water, flour, fat, and salt. Only about half of them had egg and half of them didn't.
Did they replace it with something else?
No. They just
a drier dough.
A drier dough, so that way it was a little crispier. And there was also a big split between using just oil or butter for the fat and then milk or water. And so I did all water because milk has a little bit more fat content mm-hmm. to it. And I felt with like the other fats, it would get too like squidgy in the middle. So I did all water. Yeah, I usually
do water as well.
Yeah, I find that the times where I do milk, it's like a...
It's better for like... A cream puff or mm-hmm. an eclair, something yeah. a little more like delicate. You got to really be careful with that fat content because when you're yeah. frying, you're basically adding more fat. Mm-hmm. So you're making it a lot more tender and easier for the fat to permeate.
And then since there were recipes where people were using butter versus oil, I did a mix of both just because oil is like fat and then butter also has like water content in it. Mm-hmm. So kind of equalizing that. Normally my shudo at this like batch size has 4 eggs. I did 2 eggs since there was disconnect between churros with eggs, churros without eggs, just as a happy medium between the two. I like that.
You met it in the middle.
Also because the eggs really give to that puffing effect. Yeah. And I didn't want too much of that because then there's like a ton of blowout mm-hmm, and then it's mm-hmm. like a hollow churro because of all the air.
Yeah.
So I did 2 eggs. I kind of like how it turned out. I think I want to try the next batch. No eggs.
I'm very intrigued by the no eggs. I've seen a lot where like there's low eggs, mm-hmm. but never no eggs.
Yeah. A lot of the ones that looked the best online had no eggs on them.
I mean, honestly, this makes a lot of sense mm-hmm. because eggs can like transport so much temperature. And as mm-hmm. you said, cause those blowouts, cause that spongy effect, which is beautiful in a cream puff or yeah, eclair because you can really fill it out. Mm-hmm. But lowering the eggs here when we want a drier dough is very smart, mm-hmm. but going no eggs...
I felt like
it's pretty sexy. I really want to try it myself too.
It's a great starting point.
Yeah. So tell me, what are you frying it at? Are you chilling the dough before it hits the fryer? Are you putting them in the freezer?
I froze the dough because I feel like that gives the dough like more a better chance at not blowing out as much also. But I don't like that it gives it the flat bottom.
I know. We never want flat bottoms, do we?
Never want a flat bottom. So I froze the dough and fried it off. Did half of the batch at 350 because that's kind of, that feels like such the
standard,
the standard trusty. Midpoint. Like this is a good jumping off
yeah.
temperature.
Yeah.
Felt like they were taking a little too long in the fryer. So I was afraid they were just like soaking up all the oil. Mm. So I did bump it up to 365 and I found that those browned a little better, got a little crispier.
Yeah, I usually fry at a higher temperature mm-hmm. Because I want to avoid those blowouts and
yeah.
set that shape as mm-hmm. fast as I can. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. You don't have to start from scratch. There's yeah. plenty of people who have tested some fun things. And it certainly helps to know like what those components yeah. are doing.
And there's also like golden baker's ratios.
Right.
And if we all were starting from scratch and I was like, okay, I'm going to make a cake based on these ratios, there's a good chance that your cake is going to look like that because these ratios
right.
are tried and true.
Yeah.
And there's just like little discrepancies between like yours and mine and little changes.
Right.
So they all kind of end up looking the same.
Yeah. There's a good point. Like mm-hmm. the difference between ratios and recipes. Mm-hmm. And ratios are what makes things like work. We know that something can come out, it's not going to mm-hmm. sink, it's not going to be dense. But recipes are the little things that like really separate mm-hmm. you from me, from someone else, from any dream that might come up with anyone who's listening here as well. Yeah. But that's very cool to know about the churros. And should we go ahead and eat one?
I think first you should tell me what you've prepared in terms of filling.
The filling part. Okay,
I'm a filling girl.
Why?
I feel like the filling is what brings all the flavor. Like when I'm doing something, it's like a pretty plain cake. Like it's like vanilla cake or like brown sugar cake but then the filling is what like I'm actually here for, which is why I don't fill cakes with like buttercream.
Yeah.
And I prefer things like curds or jam or pastry cream because that's where like all the flavors. Yeah. I think of everything else as the vessel to get me as much filling in my mouth as possible. Like a cream puff, I'm not there for the puff.
I'm there for the filling. Inside the puff container.
Yeah. But so tell me all about the fillings.
Well, I'm glad you feel so passionate about fillings because I also am pretty passionate about fillings. There is so many ways to sort of distill different flavors into things. So for today, I made some classic pairings with churros, like this caramel, but we've twisted it a little and infused it with dates.
Ooh.
So that it's got a little tang. And then I have some mascarpone mousse, which is just a different approach to like maybe a vanilla. It's just like a more luxurious cream.
I love our producer, Casey, getting into all the creams.
She's got to take her tax, right? This is how we pay her, guys. Yeah, until she doesn't get paid. We're reining in the big bucks. We pay her with food. Yeah. And then I have some guava black lime jam, which is not traditional, but is really sort of, it's from the same region, right? The churros come from, which is sort of Central Latin America. Guava is super floral, and black lime is actually a Persian preparation of lime where you like ferment it and dehydrate it, and it just gives it all these like deep, sour, bitter notes that are very cool, I think, to undertone tropical flavors. And then we have some passion fruit. Curd is always the winner. It's so good. And then some yuzu curd where I've infused it with basil to leave it in. Oh. So it gives it just, it really accentuates that herbaceous note. And if you're unfamiliar with yuzu, it's a very cool Japanese varietal of citrus that's
very
quite small, very floral. Like even the juice and the zest.
I don't know which one I want to start with.
Well, I think we should start
churro naked. Naked churros.
Yeah, I think we try the churro naked, you know, in its birthday suit. Cool. Okay, we should wishbone it, right? Like just...
Oh, well.
I mean, I feel like maybe you didn't try. Sorry.
Three-way split.
Casey comes in for the win. Okay, cheers. It's really good. The fry is perfect. It's really golden brown all around. It's soft. It's not too eggy. I think pulling on the eggs was correct for all the reasons we already talked about. I want more cinnamon.
Yeah, I do want more cinnamon.
Those are my only notes, Jeff. More cinnamon.
I mean, so if I were going to make adjustments to the churro itself, I think I would do one batch with no egg just to see what's up.
Would you consider introducing a leavener, like baking powder, baking soda? Well, because we're talking about cake donuts, right? And so, that's how they're leavened. So I'm wondering if there's a way to
improve. If I omitted eggs?
I'm trying, like, if what the world is doing out there at the cutting edge is no eggs, but our complaint, our presumption is dense, then baking how powder. Are we getting leavening?
So well, we've I would got do baking powder in chemical this situation.
Or biological with yeast.
Yeah.
Which is what we see in brioche and cake donuts. Yeah. So I feel like baking soda or baking powder is like the easiest one just to test time-wise. So Cassie, let's talk about the flour in those churros. Like, would you change anything up there?
I would test out bread flour just to see what it does to the structure. Because every recipe that I found did use all-purpose. Every shoe recipe I've ever made utilizes all-purpose. But yesterday I had this thought, like, I think bread flour might be the move. But I just, you know, wanted to see it with AP.
I personally love using them with whole grains. Shocking.
No way. You? Whole grains? Right. Rose wild?
I know. Take it in, folks.
Okay. This is news to me.
I have done them with quinoa and bread flour, like in the book, where quinoa has like nothing, like in terms of protein or gluten to assist. But it's got such a nice, fun, sour flavor that I think plays off the sugar. I've also done a lot of shoe doughs that I've fried and baked with rye and einkorn because both of those also don't have a lot of gluten, but they are still high in protein. They're kind of those old style. Well, they're the old wheats where those are not necessarily been hybridized for those to correlate. So when you go back into like these ancienter, more heirloom grains, you have ones that are high protein but low gluten because they're higher another protein called gliadin. So that plays a role. And so with einkorn and rye, I feel like I get a lot of structure and strength.
So I think this week the plan is to dedicate a little bit more time to this project and kind of run through the full gambit of like, okay, well, this time I'm trying bread flour, this time I'm doing no eggs, this time I'm doing no eggs plus baking powder.
Yeah.
That's how I go about recipe developing in general, where you just, you start with one mm-hmm. and you're like, okay, this is a good jumping off point.
Yeah.
And then fully, full then send, like, dig jumping in. Off and being like every little change mm-hmm. and seeing how they all work. And then maybe mixing two changes together.
Yeah.
And so as I work on this and try and perfect it, we will eventually have a perfect churro recipe.
All right, let's see what we can punch it up with and while we take it to the next level. All right, here's our mascarpone mousse.
Okay.
Casey first.
Producer eats first.
Mmm. Mmm. It's so light.
Mmm. So, yeah, what'd you think of the mascarpone mousse?
I loved how, like, light it was. I really like a churro with something light.
It's just, like, a good base.
It is.
You could even put that with, like, another thing.
Like, these two, the mousse and the jam together, I feel like would be... I don't think we should start... mixing things quite
no yet. No, but let's go there next. But let's go to Jam
let's
Down.
Let's go to guava and
black lime.
So how do you incorporate the black lime like into the jam?
So I'm grinding the lime down in like a powerful blender or food processor, whatever you have available to you. Burlap and Barrel actually has it powdered. Wow,
this is so good.
Do you need a moment, Cassie?
I need the whole deli. I need the whole deli. I need it expeditiously. Oh my god, that is so good. Oh fuck.
What I love about this jam is that...
everything? Is this all we have? Or is there more in the...
There's some more. Yeah, okay, there's cool. some more.
I feel like guava is so underrated.
People don't know what to do with it. Yeah. It's so intoxicating, the aroma, and there's so many variety, but mm-hmm. other than eat it fresh, people aren't quite sure.
Yeah.
And to do a jam with a tropical fruit is hard mm-hmm. because tropical fruits in general don't have pectin. Mm-hmm. All other fruits have some layer of pectin, and you do not need to be adding pectin to your jams, any commercial pectin. But with tropical fruit, my little trick is to always pair it with a citrus mm-hmm. and I'm infusing the citrus into there while the jam is cooking. So in yep. the case of this, like, there was a ton of smashed lime and lemon in mm-hmm. a cheesecloth while it boiled away to lend its intense amount of pectin to the guava mm-hmm. to give us a true jam. So that's a little hack you can do. So yeah. All right. Next step.
I feel like we should have ended with that one.
Oh my God. What's grabbing your eyes next?
I wanted to break it up with a little bit of
caramel. So what I did here is make this caramel and infuse it with some dates that I then immersion blended in and strained out. But you could leave it chunky too.
It tastes like a grown-up version of like Aunt Jemima's syrup, but like so much better and with so much more depth of flavor.
It is an honor to be compared to a national icon.
Aunt Jemima demands respect.
That bottle. Mm-hmm. That bottle. That body. So that's funny. I like that. I mean, you're completely right. This would be great drizzled on fresh or piped in. All right, we're gonna go to yuzu next.
Yes.
Okay, well, so how do you like filling things? Let's just even talk about it, because, like, filled churros, you said, is your favorite. You have a lot of childhood memories about it.
I'm not sure how they filled them, because if I remember correctly, they came, like, in a box, and we just kind of, like, threw them in the oven, put them in a bag, threw them under a heat lamp until people came and bought them. For me, personally, when I fill things, I'm usually filling donuts, so I just, like, kind of cut a hole in the top with a knife, kind of jiggle it around to like create space for the maximum amount of filling. Stick in a piping bag and load that baby up.
Let it rip.
I think for these though, the way to do it is that piping tip, the like filling piping tip that's really long and you just like, ugh.
Okay, well, I've tried my best with a piping bag.
She's coming out of both ends.
Whew, she's come undone. Another fun way I have filled churros on the fly is with a squeeze bottle.
Ooh, that is so smart.
With a super long tip. That's a really useful one just to have them on back and not have to deal with like sort of the floppiness of a pastry
and
bag.
It's also like a very thin hole at the end, so you have a little bit more control. I feel like piping bag with the hole cut in it, it's kind of big. It's kind of lunky trying to like jam it into the dough hole you've created.
Yeah, you really shouldn't jam it into the dough hole.
Mm-mm, you got to treat her with respect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Buy her dinner first. Yeah. What was your thoughts on the yuzu?
I didn't get the basil. I mean, it's delicious. Obviously.
Heard. I actually think it could be more basil. I've usually just been grinding it in fresh after like infusing it into the like the acid overnight. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking about making an oil like I usually do with fig leaf.
Yeah.
Like really just a fresh infusion in a blender with the plant matter and high quality neutral oil. And then adding that in as part of a fat. You know, traditionally, as you know, curd is made with butter, but super great with olive oil. Mm-hmm. So that's my next iteration. You know, again, recipe development, always in flux.
Always changing.
Always trying new things.
Always getting better.
The flavor rule, which is that flavor rules
everything around me.
So, yeah, that's yuzu, which I think is just super fun. Like, it's hard to go back to a regular lemon when, like, yuzu's out here wearing, like, a red sequins dress and doing a tap dance. Like, she's got my attention. All right, let's go to the passion fruit. Fresh juice and some seeds folded in, too.
I love passion fruit. The second I see, like, one passion fruit at the market, I, like, go feral. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Casey gets it. Ugh. Yeah. And it's... I think it's funny that when I'm thinking, like, for my summer flavors, I'm just, like, passion fruit. It's so, like, summery and bright, but it's, like, a fall and winter fruit. And citrus,
flavors,
too. Right? Like, I'm just like, oh, lemon makes sense for summer, but it's, like...
Yeah, and lemonade stands and all those core memories. But these are actually, so, like, winter gifts things. Of winter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's great because it's, like, they taste like sunshine, right? Yeah. And it's, like, we don't have any, so it's perfect.
I also love the crunch of a seed.
Yeah, leave the seeds in all the time. I'm here for pulp. I'm here for texture.
Yeah.
I do think if I can self-feedback, a little pop of citric acid would really that's help like a, that shine. So what was your favorite after exploring all of these
guava
different
black
things?
Lime.
The guava black lime. Yeah. Not even a moment's
not
hesitation.
Even I didn't have to think about that.
What do you think in terms of combos?
The best part is all these flavors would pair with each other, the yuzu and the mascarpone, and then also the passion fruit and the mascarpone, the guava and mascarpone, the caramel, like they all will pair in a web with each other.
It sounds like everybody wants mascarpone. She the it girl.
She's just like a wonderful vessel for everyone else to keep it creamy, like to cut through some of the tang of the other ones.
I'm here for caramel with a little zip, as you know. So that, I think caramel would be like really great with the passion fruit or even with the yuzu.
Yeah. That's another thing I love about fillings is how endlessly you could just combine them.
Yeah.
And like you can use it for cake. You could use it for churros. You could use it for donuts. You could use it in a pie. You could do this. You could do, like you could go on forever. With these five different flavors.
These are not
and just like
churro fillings.
They're everything fillings.
And none of these recipes, I mean, the jam took a little while longer, but it was inactive.
Yeah.
Most of these things came together in less than half an hour, would you say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I think the thing about having lots of fillings is what you said, like just having lots of options. So I really hope that, like, you know, people look at most recipes like that, where the components are components you can mix and match. Yeah. You can love a portion and not all of it.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like people get frozen when they see like a composed recipe in a book and it's like, this is my shoe bun that's filled with like hazelnut cream and blueberry or whatever, and they're like, okay, well this is the only way. I can also never use those two fillings anywhere else. Like, you know, this was composed to be as this and it won't ever work with anything else.
None of which is true.
None of that is true. You can take the filling that you see in one recipe and apply it and swap it out for something in another recipe.
I think it's one of the easiest ways for people to feel like you're so innovative. Well, I mean, I think that was a pretty successful breakdown of how to make churros with fillings. If I could change anything, I think I would include a classic cajete or dulce de leche in our lineup of fillings. Where do you fall on that? Which one do you prefer?
Cajeta. Every day. Goddamn day.
Mm-hmm. So for the folks at home, cajeta is similar.
Similar to dulce de leche. It's made with goat's milk. So it's a caramelized goat's milk.
So So it comes across, it's a little more tangy, it's mm-hmm. a little more special. That's kind of the vibe I was trying to go with the date. Mm-hmm. But I did not use goat's milk. But I also totally go for Kate over Dulce Leche. But Dulce Leche is so delicious. It's, don't get me wrong. I love including it as a secret surprise mm-hmm. in like a tres leches cake for another mm-hmm. sort of leche presentation.
Or in flan. Sweetened condensed milk for flan, because totally a way to good. Make like a quick dulce de leche is to like boil the can of sweetened totally. Condensed milk. You just swap those out in flan. The depth of flavor.
You mean for the brown sugar for the caramel portion? Or
no,
you...
like in the actual custard, if you swap out just that can of sweetened condensed milk for dulce de leche, it's the same like texture.
Oh, that's great. Are you delicious. Making up for the volume loss with additional milk? Or are you just like
not
worrying about it? It's not significant.
It's not significant enough to make like a giant change.
But yeah, I think that's what's really missing here. Yeah. Obviously, besides the chocolate. I think the only classic one we didn't cover is like a classic chocolate sauce. Dipping sauce. Mm-hmm. What is that for you? Is it a ganache? Or do you lean more towards the like slightly looser like dipping sauce?
I feel like I lean into the, like, looser, chocolatey dipping sauce versus, like, this really rich and creamy ganache.
Same. I'm more, I think I go real loose because like I remember chocolate? Dipping it in my, like, chocolate milk. So. Yeah. Because churros can be a breakfast food when you do it that way.
I mean, there's those Cinnamon Toast Crunch has, like, a Cinnamon Toast churro.
Exactly. Exactly.
Cereal. A churro is a donut. It's a straight donut. I am a curler, though. I'm a little gay donut.
But a curler is a churro. It's a churro.
Yeah, it's
a
just
donut.
A circle. Yeah.
It's a bottom.
Yeah.
To a churro.
In the debate of crawler versus churro, that I don't think is a real debate. Would you go about developing them in the same way? Like, would you use the same dough for churro and crawler?
I do. Oh. And mostly because it's like they're both fried. And so mm-hmm. I'm thinking about the same things. Mm-hmm. And it's also using that like star tip, getting those grooves. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's enough in common that I basically apply the same method. But yeah, for other donuts, obviously, I'm using like brioche or cake. I only really change it based on the process rather than like frying versus baking. Mm-hmm. That's what really kind of makes that decision for me. What about you?
I would do more eggs because for me personally, in a crawler, I like more of that rise and kind of the tunnel of air.
But you don't mind the increased eggy taste?
No, because also all my comments can conflict with each other and it's not.
Yeah, you contain multitudes. I'm here for it.
But typically I'm glazing a cruller, and so added sweetness, because I find a churro is sweet but not as sweet as something that's like glazed fully. So that sugary component kind of overpowers some of the egginess and balances it for me, versus in a churro I think you get hit with a lot more of the eggy when you have more eggs in the batter.
So I feel like I heard you say something pretty controversial earlier, which is that sugar balances eggs. And I wonder if people are going to now try that in their scrambled eggs.
Don't do that. I don't eat eggs because I really don't like eggs.
There we
are. But I just feel like...
That is what I was trying to get to the bottom of. She's confessed.
I feel like adding sugar to scrambled eggs, that... You know how like you add sugar to things for like to maybe get people to like them a little more? Or is that just, you know, when you don't like something because it's like too tangy or whatever.
And then you just straight up put sugar in it.
I'm just like, a little sugar isn't going to hurt anyone.
It makes the medicine go down.
I feel like if you guys were like, hey, Cassie, we have like scrambled eggs for you. We're sure you're going to like this batch. And you just added like a tablespoon of sugar to it. That would make me hate them even more. Well, the thing is, I love the idea of eggs. Like, I love watching all those videos where they pop the yolks and then the yolk, like, dribbles into, like, all of the, like, pulled pork or whatever the fuck it's on. And it just looks so good. Or, like, a poached egg or, like, a 7-minute egg. They all look so good. And then I make it and I'm eating it and I can't do it.
Is it the flavor? Is it the texture?
It's the both. It is the
both.
Oh,
well, that really narrowed it down, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah. If I had to, like, if you were being held captive and they were like, you have to eat an egg to save Rose's life, I would choose a hard-boiled egg. And then okay. you would be indebted to me forever because that is traumatic. So also, I think it's a little unfair that whoever kidnapped you in my head thought you were only worth one hard-boiled egg.
Yeah. You really need to have a conversation about my worth with your imaginary internal daydream character.
But to be fair, you would not be saved if I had to eat more than one egg.
Wow. That's the line, folks.
I'm sorry. I really don't like eggs. I love game. You.
I think not liking eggs is super relatable, Cassie. Oh. I think also a thing that people kind of forget in baking that they freely accept in cooking is the fact that you can make changes along the way.
Yeah, you can taste as you go.
Yeah. So you can taste as you go in baking as well. I know some people are afraid of some of those raw ingredients, but I often, if I'm testing a new cookie, I'm not going to bake all of them off at once. I'm going to bake one or two off, and like then I can go back to the dough, and for the most part, like, it's not that hard for me to like whip in another egg or a little more fat or a little more sugar. I have to let the dough rest afterwards, but I think that if you would agree, there's always ways to add another egg in later if want, right? Like, if you test this without eggs, your batch is not ruined if you don't like
it.
Yeah,
I can just...
You can add another egg in. Yeah. Or if you wanted to have more moisture, you can slowly add milk in, so... Mm-hmm. Just want to call out all these, like, little places where people, you know, they're not committed.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing I hear most with baking, are people are like, well, I don't know, you do everything, and then you don't know if it's going to work, and then it doesn't work. And it's like, that's just anxiety talking.
I mean, that's also when I'm doing, like, my Cassie's Choice cakes, and I'm like, I feel like this is going to work, and so I just go with it. I'll always make enough batter to have, like, a 4-inch cake baked off alongside the 6-inch cake, so I can... taste it without like cutting into someone else's cake, because then you know and then I can make my little like chef snack, my little like taster, and I'm like, yeah, this is good, or oh shit, I gotta scrap this and make another batch of cake. But most of the time it's a pretty consistent thing where I kind of know what I'm doing, and
is again, I think another thing, it's like I think that people get scared of baking because they haven't done it as much as they've cooked, you know? It's just a language. You're not as familiar. But the more you do it, the more you're going to learn. So that's kind of the process. I mean, we talked about how we do it abstractly and now how we've done it with these delicious churros we've just gorged ourselves on.
And we really hope that you've picked something up from this that you can apply to your own cooking and baking.
And we'll be talking about this a lot because it's a subject that we both really are interested in.
Yeah. It's also just such a big part of our lives. There's no way we can't talk about it.
Yeah, you're stuck with us.
Yeah, like...
You're stuck with us.
We have two points of conversation. One is Taylor Swift. The other is recipe development. So.
When is she going to drop Rep TV? I can't handle the conspiracy theories anymore. All right. Well, that's all for today. So thank you for joining us.
And remember,
eat cute,
be cute. Ta-da.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us this week on Kitchen Tape. Our theme music is created by Dan Crabtree. You can subscribe on Spotify and Apple to be notified when we release new episodes every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this week's episode, we'd love it if you left us a review. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, contact us on social media. You can reach Rose at TRoseWild and Cassie at IBakeMistakes, or email us at kitchentapepod@gmail.com. Catch you next time on Kitchen Tape Podcast.